on Cambridge 105 Radio. With the Cambridgeshire Football Association, promoting football at all levels across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
Hello, yes, you're listening to Cambridge 105 Radio, and this is the 105 Sports Special, the show where we wrap up all of the local sport news across the week and all of the COVID-related sports stories too. On today's show, I chat to Richie Williams after the Cambridge Rugby Club head coach signed a new two-year deal this week and moved upstairs into a new role as Director of Rugby. He also talks about the preparations ahead of the 2020-21 campaign, whenever that may be. We hear from Cambridge United Chief Executive Ian Mather after it was announced last Friday the League Two campaign had been brought to a premature end. Our Cambridge United reporter Tim Armitage also joins us for a chat. Now, following the government's easing of lockdown measures last week, allowing us to exercise more in public spaces, the ECB released some guidelines on the usage of outdoor net facilities. Ben Wallace from Cambridgeshire Cricket has the details for us. And sticking with cricket, we also hear a snippet of the recent From the Pavilion lockdown podcast this week, where England fast bowler and World Cup winner Mark Wood joined us on the show. And Cambridgeshire Cats will not be playing any American football this season after their campaign has recently been cancelled. Coach Daniel Visick joins us later on in the show to talk about that. So thanks very much for tuning in. My name is Ollie Slack. If you want to get in touch, you can do at 105 Sport on Twitter and Facebook, the best place to do so. So let's start with Cambridge Rugby this evening, and their head coach Richie Williams signed a new two-year deal this week and a slight change in title too, moving upstairs to a new role as Director of Rugby. I'm delighted to say Richie joins us on the show. Thanks for coming on, Richie.
Yeah, no worries, Ollie.
And firstly, congratulations is the first thing to say, because you've entered a new two-year deal announced on Monday, moving from head coach to Director of Rugby. So congratulations on that. How are you feeling? How's lockdown been for you over the past couple of weeks since we last spoke?
Yeah, firstly, thanks. I think it's very reassuring to know that the club and the executive committee have that level of trust in me, and you know, I hope what they've seen over the past sort of two seasons has showed them that what I've done is trying to take the sort of club in the right direction. I think looking back on reflection on last season, it was a positive change to where it was two seasons ago. I think our level of performances were a lot more consistent than what they were 2 years ago. And again, I'm really excited now to be able to sign for another 2 years. And I think what that allows me to do is to get planning again slightly longer term. And my new remit with the Director of Rugby title, in addition to the head coaching role, which I've had for the past two seasons, will allow me to invest a lot more time and energy in the wider club, and looking at how we can develop the younger players at the club, how we can aid with the coach development with some of the age group coaches, but ultimately with that long-term plan of getting the players from the younger age groups to transition through to play senior rugby at Cambridge. Because, you know, again, I think we've got a pretty special environment at the club. I think you look at the top end that I've been involved in the last 2 years, and you look at some of the opportunities available to some of the younger players at the club, it's really exciting. So, yeah, again, as you can probably hear by the sound of my voice, I'm really excited about, you know, the new role, and can't wait to get started again.
Yeah, brilliant to hear. And I imagine as well a nice sort of extra added bit of security, perhaps, because of, given the current situation as well, a nice touch.
Absolutely. And again, I'm really grateful to the club for showing that level of trust and that level of support. And as with anything, when you're given a time frame of two seasons, it allows you probably a bit more scope and a bit more flexibility to put a real sort of holistic plan in place for the wider club. I think if you're looking to change anything, whether it be an environment, whether it be an organisation that you work within, if you've got that time period of 2 years, it does give you that scope to develop things in a lot more detail. So, yeah, I'm excited about carrying on the relationships that I've started to build over the past two seasons. We're lucky that some of the people that we've got involved in the club are fantastic. The work that they put in behind the scenes, you know, allows us to get the results that we want. And you know, I've started to develop those connections and those relationships with a lot of the mini and junior coaches at the club. And that's been supported really well by Ben Penfold, who's the community manager at the club. So, yeah, it's exciting. We've used this period of time of COVID-19 to enhance those relationships with the wider group at the club. So, as I alluded to earlier, we're really excited now about starting back and seeing these plans put into action.
And it is a change in title as well, from head coach to director of rugby. Does that then include all the stuff you've just mentioned, like the Vipers, the that pathway from youth to junior side to first team, and obviously coaching the youngsters as well? Is it just a bit more all-involving role?
Yeah, absolutely. That is very self-encompassing now, in addition to the head coaching role, which will remain overseeing the senior side, the first team. It is a developmental role as well, in respect of looking at the wider club, which covers the mini and juniors, which looks at the Vipers, it looks at the academy, it looks at the second and third team, and also engaging with the wider community. So it's a role that oversees all those aspects of the club. But what I'm really sort of keen on is enhancing those relationships with the likes of Ben Penfold, with the other coaches at the club, with the executive committee. And it's just probably having all of those strands a bit better aligned than what it has been in the previous few seasons.
We'll come on to the off-the-field stuff in just a little bit. But with regards to on the field, you arrived in 2018, avoided relegation, then last season finished 10th out of 16. The table suggests there's been progression. Would you go along with that as well, actually being with the club and the team day in, day out? Would you say there's been clear progression?
Yeah, and again, the league position will show that there has been that development in terms of our results and looking at our points that we've scored. But I think it goes a little bit deeper than you know what we're seeing from the sort of outside. I think for us, the whole environment, the culture at the club has improved considerably from where it was 2 years ago. I look at the first team that I've been working predominantly with over the last two seasons, and we're at a place now where we've got a really cohesive group. And last season, that took us five or six games to gel and embed that philosophy that we're now starting to see. So there has been lots of development, both on and off the field. And again, just very grateful that the committee have seen that level of development. And, you know, I've put another 2 years in play on my contract.
And obviously, being with the club for 2 years now, a lot in sport in general, a lot is talked about identity and coaches putting their stamp on the team. Do you feel that either you're in the process of doing that now, or you have done that already and you're starting to see the fruits of your labour?
Yeah, it's still ongoing, Ollie, to be honest. I think we've changed the opinion of a lot of people from outside of the club on, you know, what they think Cambridge Rugby Club represents, and it's still work in progress at the moment. But I think what we have got now is a real good environment, some really strong leaders within that group. The coaching and management staff that we've got in place can help drive those standards. So I'm really optimistic that when we do start back next season, you'll see some more developments in terms of results, but also, you know, the off-field performances as well.
And because of all your extra work now, because of your role as director of rugby with the Vipers and the youth team as well, does that sort of signify your long-term ambitions at the club? You mentioned, like you say, you can think a bit more long-term now because of the new deal, but because of the change in title, does it mean you're looking at being at Cambridge for a long while now?
I'd like to think so. You know, we don't know what the future is going to look like, but, you know, in terms of my career, I'm still on a coaching journey. I think these experiences that will come over the next 2 years will, you know, help shape me as a person and as a coach, but also holistically look at that long-term vision of Cambridge Rugby Club. We've set ourselves some ambitious targets over the next couple of seasons with regards to looking at player development with some of the younger groups. So I'd like to think, with the landscape of sport changing as a result of COVID-19, that, you know, we're going to become a lot more sustainable as a rugby club than probably what we were a few years ago. So yeah, it is exciting. It's still good that there's that involvement with the first team, which I'm really passionate about, that the hands-on coaching. But, you know, I'm also equally as passionate of developing other people and, you know, developing that whole club environment and that whole club approach.
And with the extra workload as well, will you feel the need to bring in maybe some extra coaches, one or two, to help you with that first team environment and the coaching, just to maybe take a bit of weight off you and so you're not, I guess, spreading yourself so thin?
Yeah, it's things that we're considering and looking at the moment. I think going back to last season, we had a really strong coaching structure in place for the first team. I think underneath the first team, with particularly the second team and third team, those are areas of the club that we need to develop. And again, we're in conversations now with a number of coaches that are going to come in to assist that process next season to really drive that player development. So, yeah, there will be some changes. We will enhance our coaching team next season. I think if we want to stay true to our philosophy, which is to be a really progressive environment at National One, then we've got to be seen to be providing a really good learning environment for players and a really good player development environment. So that's something that will be changing over the next couple of weeks. You know, we hope to announce probably the end of the month a couple of new appointments from within. So again, it just aligns itself to that whole club vision that we want to really drive.
And you touched on ambitions and where you want to take the club. Simplistically looking at it, you'd say the next league up is the Championship. Is that where Cambridge want to get to eventually?
Potentially one day. I think for us, we're very much looking at internally how we can improve and develop. And there's a whole host of things that we'll be looking to evolve and adapt next season. And if it is come the end of next season that we're in a position that, you know, we find ourselves that we could be going up to the Championship, then, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But I think we're ambitious as a club, but we're also very realistic as well. And until we get some stronger foundations in place, then we'll probably ask that question again in 12 months' time.
I'll remember it and we'll ask you again in 12 months' time. With regards to how it's been over the last couple of weeks, obviously with lockdown measures being eased slightly, have preparations started? Have they changed at all? How's it been over the last couple of weeks gearing up to next season, whenever that may be?
Yeah, I think things have developed considerably over the last couple of weeks. I think that the recent guidelines that have come out from the government and the RFU have shown that, you know, we are able to start to plan and consider how we're going to structure some of our training sessions. I think it's been very vague at the moment, but what it has shown is that we're able to work with individual players and put some systems in place that will eventually help when we do start back our pre-season officially. So I think it's a lot more encouraging than what it was a few weeks ago, that there is some bright light on the horizon in terms of team sport. So yeah, what we need to do now as a club is to look at ways that we can make sure that the environment, the clubhouse in particular, is safe if we do start back some form of training. And I know there's a lot of ongoing work at the moment behind the scenes with the rugby club to make sure that we've got some clear procedures in place to help with that process.
And you've been doing a few Zoom sessions as well and trying to get the boys, well, I guess, back in shape and keeping them fit and ready.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've been really diligent. Again, we spoke earlier around the type of player that we've got at the club now. They're all really hardworking. And I think they've seen this extended period away from the club as a good opportunity to develop areas of their game. And what we've tried to do is to keep everybody engaged. The players are very close off the field, so they've kept in touch with each other really well. And we've tried to run a lot of development sessions via Zoom. So we've run a mini and junior webinar most Mondays where we've tried to engage with those mini and junior coaches around different coaching topics and different areas that we feel can benefit the club as a whole. Next Monday, we're pretty fortunate that we've got Will Hooley, who's an ex-Cambridge mini and junior player that's played in the World Cup for the USA, currently at Bedford Blues. So Will is coming on to do a Q&A with some members of the club, so that's really exciting. And this Friday we're hosting our end of season awards evening via Zoom, so that's something that we'll probably draw a line under last season. And I think, you know, that everyone else started to look ahead to next season when the fixtures are hopefully announced over the next 2 weeks.
Excellent. Well, that'd be great to see. Will you be wearing full suit and tie, bow tie for the event?
Yeah, I think we'll try and go smart dress for Friday. And it's always a big event in any sporting club, the end of season awards. So it's something that we want to make a big fuss of on Friday. And we've opened it up to the wider club as well. So members will be invited. The mini and junior coaches and players will be invited. And then, you know, if the players want to stay on to have a few more drinks later into the night, I'm sure that's something that they'll arrange themselves.
Well, that sounds like an absolutely fabulous evening. Richie, thanks very much. And congratulations once again on the new deal. And we'll speak again soon.
Yeah, you're welcome, Ollie, and stay safe. Thank you.
Cheers, and you. Bye, Richie.
Cheers. Take care. Bye.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Let's move on to Cambridge United now. And as I said, last Friday it was announced that the League Two campaign had been brought to an end via a vote from League Two clubs. They also voted in favour of a unweighted points per game method. That was what the EFL agreed. Let's hear then from Cambridge United Chief Executive Ian Mather talking about these issues, how the season was wrapped up. He was speaking to BBC Radio Cambridgeshire at the end of last week.
The key question to decide is how to complete this season. And there was no vote to say, make a final decision. What it was an indicative vote. The clubs were asked to say what would be their preference to conclude the season in the situation we've got. And the conclusion was that we should finish the season with the top three being promoted, but work out how you get to the top three by averaging out points per game over the season. The next four clubs will then go into playoffs, as would have happened normally. But again, you work out who gets in there because of points per game. And the relegation slot is slightly more confusing, but of course makes no difference at all to Cambridge United because we were in the middle of the table.
Is this good news for you? Are you happy, or is it the best outcome in a bad situation?
I think it's both. It is the best outcome in a bad situation. And we're happy with it. If you look at the cost of completing our five home games and four away games, it was somewhere in the region of £200,000. The testing cost was estimated to be about £140,000. We'd have had to take players off furlough and other staff off furlough, and we'd have had travel costs for away games. So £200,000 to make no difference to our league status for next season just doesn't stack up.
Normally at this point, I'd ask you about the mood in the room, but clearly there was no room. The virtual room, what were people's feelings? Was everyone wholeheartedly behind the move? Were there any sort of discussions of alternatives?
Yeah, it was an interesting meeting to be in. And I have to say, unanimity, there was a strong sense of being together to try and find a solution that was fair. And good examples of that were Port Vale, who just missed out on the playoff places, having been in them for quite a long part of the season, said, well, actually, for the greater good, it's right that we agree with this, even though they're not going to get in the playoffs. So to get 24 clubs all agreeing, it was quite something. So I think that's a positive to take away from it. It was the football community working collaboratively.
Where do we go from here?
So the board of EFL will now consider this indicative vote. They've also got to consider what to do with League One and the Championship. And then they will come back and there may be a further vote about it. So there's a bit more process to go. And also in particular in relation to the relegation slot where Stevenage are currently sitting at the bottom. There's a question of whether Stevenage are relegated. But I think the top is the way forward is clear.
I'm wondering as well, I mean, I know you've come to a conclusion right now, but things might not have changed that much in September. Where do you think we'd be looking to move forward by the time autumn comes? What would the football authorities need to do in order to help the process along, if anything?
Well, the next big question is when do we start playing and when are crowds allowed back? And that will, the answer to both of those questions will be dictated by scientific advice and when it's safe to do so. We're working on the basis that we will start playing in the autumn at some point and that crowds will be allowed back at some point. But it's a bit imprecise at the moment.
So that was Cambridge United Chief Executive Ian Mather there. And let's hear now the views of Tim Armitage, our Cambridge United reporter. Tim, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem.
Another week and we keep getting little bits of information. On Friday, League Two clubs, of course, voted to end the 2019-20 season with immediate effect via an unweighted points per game resolution in the end. Before we get on to Ian Mather's comments, no doubt in your mind that it was absolutely the right thing to do?
Right or wrong, you couldn't do anything else. I mean, they can't afford to go back. It's too difficult. There are so many inherent problems, like we talked about last week, that it was the only logical decision. It's weird that they've gone for the unweighted, given that you know, that kind of acknowledges that there's no difference between home and away, and obviously everyone sees that there is. So it's interesting to see why they chose to do that. But in the end, you know, it is what it is, and I think it was the only sensible decision to make, and I'm glad that at least that's out of the way, because there's still masses more to discuss as to what happens promotion and relegation wise, what happens next season.
Let's talk about Ian Mather's comments. What did you make of them? I guess the stark statistic, mentioning about 5 home games and 4 away games costing around $200,000, and then you got the testing as well. So they were never really going to vote for anything else, were they?
I mean, with this, it's financial suicide if you're not bringing anything in at all to be spending that much money, you know, when you know you've got no money. It's to see that the League Two don't want to play football until people are allowed back in, because without that money, you know, half a season is going to cost you £1 million. You know, and who can afford to lose £1 million? I mean, you know, that's I said last week. That's the kind of unanswered question is, forget this season, what about next season? Because I don't see how, you know, it's gonna work. I mean, yeah, okay, they can. There's the streamed version of the game, but they're not going to charge. They're not going to be able to charge anything like what they charge for a ticket. And you're not going to get as many people watching the stream as you would at a game. So, you know, it's a tiny income stream that will come out of it. As you said last week, you know, what happens to sponsorship money? A sponsor's going to want to pay with a much more limited audience for their message, you know. So I think this is the next big discussion: is how on earth can football survive next season, let alone this season? And I think that's going to be a really interesting one. Unless, I know there's been talk about the Premier League handing money down, but yeah, I can see that happening really soon. So, you know, and it's the right thing to do, undoubtedly. But I don't think it'll happen. It certainly won't happen in any meaningful way. And you've got 24 clubs, probably, you know, at least half of them will be struggling financially, if not more. And, you know, you're potentially telling them, you know, start next season, no crowds, losing 200,000 every 5 weeks, you know, and that's it. People are just going to say, okay, well, give it till September, October time, and then we'll be dropping out of the league because we'll be bankrupt. So interesting times ahead.
Yeah, Swindon Town chairman Lee Power thinks that clubs probably 30-40% of them probably won't even make next season if they don't get any financial help at all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've seen it over and over again. Clubs higher up than you know, League Two, you know, apart from the odd standout. Like, you know, we always talk about Salford City. They seem to have a bottomless pit of money, and Forest Green have proved that in the past. But, you know, I say you could take at least half the clubs in that league and know that they are going to be really, really struggling to you know, to put sides out next year, irrespective of when and where we start playing, but more about, you know, being able to financially manage it. So that will be up the league as well. There'll be League One clubs in exactly the same position. So it is interesting as to where that money will come from, and it'll be interesting to see, if it doesn't come, you know, what the shape of football is next season.
Do you see realistically the Premier League helping out at all?
You'd like to think so. I mean, it's almost like they've got to, because otherwise they could end up being responsible for, you know, the demise of league football, which, you know, perhaps they don't care about. But there's so much money up there, and yes, okay, they've got bigger wage bills, but, you know, they're making money. It makes sense for, you know, somebody's going to have to bail a lot of these clubs out, whether it's the FA, whether it's the Premier League, whether it's the government, where, you know, whether it's fans reaching into their own pockets over and over and over again. Because if not, they're under a number of teams that you would guess just won't survive. You know, down at the bottom, we've seen, you know, the trouble Macclesfield have been in last season and this season financially. You know, they look like they just about started to get their head above water, and then this happens. And, you know, it's a sad state, but that's what we've got ourselves into. You know, so now somebody's going to have to get them out, otherwise they won't be around.
On Monday, it was 6 years to the day that Cambridge United got promoted via the playoffs in that magical day at Wembley. And with regards to the conference, Harrogate Town were probably dreaming of a similar scenario. Now, they're second in the conference table behind Barrow, but Harrogate Town at the moment, assuming Stevenage don't get relegated, because the clubs in League One and Two have said they would rather not relegation into the National League, how must they be feeling at the minute? It'd be gutting, wouldn't it, if you were Harrogate Town?
Yeah, it's grossly unfair. What would League Two say if League One said, oh yeah, well, we're not going to actually relegate anyone? You know, they would be up in arms about it. If you're calling to an end to the season, and you're putting the position based on whatever system, weighted, unweighted, whatever system you're going to pick, you've then got a league table to work from. So if you've got a league table to work from, you know where people are. So you promote, relegate, or they're planning playoffs still potentially. Mm. But you can't just say, oh, it'd be a bit unfair on Stevenage. Stevenage have been rubbish and they deserve to go down. And Harrogate or whoever in the conference deserve to come up. That's the way it is. So I really don't understand how you can say that, you know, it'd be unfair on Stevenage to relegate them. It'll be unfair on the League One clubs that come down to make way for Crewe, Swindon, Plymouth, Exeter, whoever it is that goes up. But that's the way football is. And Stevenage, I don't even think Stevenage can complain. I mean, you know, Macclesfield are only 3 points above them, but that's because they've had loads of points taken off them, and still Stevenage can't get ahead of them. Stevenage have been atrocious all season. 3 wins in the entire season for Stevenage, and that's just, you know, you can't stay up for that. You've got to give the place to the people that deserve it in the league below. Simple as that.
And as followers of Cambridge United and supporters of Cambridge United, and being there at that day at Wembley in 2014, we know how hard it is to get out of that conference.
Absolutely.
And who knows as well, for next season, it's such an unpredictable league. Harrogate could find themselves anywhere in that division.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? You know, you make a push and you've got some money for that season. You go all out for it, and it doesn't happen. And then the better players move on to clubs perhaps in League Two, although I don't expect that'll happen be happening this year, because who knows what's going to happen to the transfer market. But you're going to lose your better players because they're going to want to move on even if you can't. So I just don't get it. If you've decided the place, if you've got enough confidence to decide the places for those who are going up, you've got to have the confidence that you've decided them at the other end for those that should go down. And I'm afraid, you know, Stevenage is a good day out, and it's nice to go to Stevenage, and if we can beat them, it makes it even better. And there have been some really good games recently there. But, you know, I think if Stevenage looked at themselves, they'll realise if they get away with this that they are the luckiest team in the Football League by not being relegated to the conference.
Tim, pleasure talking to you. Who knows what will happen next week? And I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
No problem. Cheers.
On Cambridge 105 Radio. Yes, you're listening to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Let's talk cricket now then. And as I said earlier on, the ECB released some pretty important info last week, as after the government had announced a slight easing of lockdown, the ECB had to release their guidelines on the usage of outdoor net facilities. They first sought clarification from the government, but then last Friday announced the guidelines. Ben Wallace from Cambridgeshire Cricket joins us now to clear all of it up. Thanks for coming on, Ben.
No problem, mate. Hope you're well.
Yeah, very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. The sun's out, so it's just obviously we can do a little bit more than we used to be able to do in terms of getting outside and doing a bit of exercise and stuff. But yeah, it's just a shame that we're still relatively stuck inside at the moment. But obviously, there's a lot more bigger things going on in the world at the moment. So yeah, it's frustrating, but it's as it is at present.
Yeah, certainly is. Irrespective, it is quite tantalising, isn't it? Looking at the sunshine and thinking, God, we could be playing cricket around at this time of year.
Yeah, we could be out there. We've obviously, in light of the recent announcements and everything like that, there's a slight move on what we can do and what we're allowed to do in terms of as long as guidelines are adhered to and everything, which is great and positive and a step forward. Obviously, we're obviously waiting with bated breath, I suppose, in terms of what the next announcements and next steps could be. So, but positive that we're able to start looking at putting some plans in place to get some activity going.
Certainly is. Let's talk about those guidelines, the easing of lockdown measures last Monday, a week Monday on the 11th of May. Boris Johnson announced that you can now exercise with up to one person from outside your household. But of course, you still must adhere to the 2 metre safety distance. Team sports are not allowed, but individual sports such as tennis were. Of course, you can do team sports with your family and members of your own household outside as well. But of course, they're not people from outside your household. So a bit of a change there, like you said, Ben, allowing us to be slightly more flexible. How has that changed the rules on what we can do within cricket generally at the minute?
Well, just obviously, as you mentioned, the team sports are still not allowed. So obviously, ECB still maintains the position that all recreational cricket remains suspended. But that's with the sole exception of the use of outdoor cricket facilities, i.e. nets, for the purpose of undertaking exercise as set out in the guidance. So obviously with members of your family or with one person from outside of your household. So two people in a net practicing at any one time. So that's the position now reducing of the lockdown measures has allowed, and that is the guidance that's come out, and that's really how it affects cricket in terms of what we can do at the moment.
Yeah, and I think a few days later, the ECB were quite sort of careful of making sure clubs didn't jump to the gun and think, well, let's go outside, let's play in the nets, because obviously people would be desperate to play cricket. They made the point quite clear that they want to just get a bit more clarification from the government on the use of outdoor cricket facilities like nets, and then they released a whole heap of guidelines on the 15th of May, which was last Friday, on how to do this slightly more safely.
Yeah, I think obviously it was great when it was announced, but there was obviously some underlying details and everything of requirements of how to maintain a safe environment when performing that activity, and that was one of the reasons why the time was taken to make sure that all the details were provided and to put it into a reasonably clear process to follow. Although, like you said, there is a fair amount of it. It's probably been reduced quite a bit compared to all of the amount of stuff that could have been put in there to make it easier for users, volunteers and the recreational game to understand. So, for example, if you have a three-lane net facility at your club, you would only be able to use two of the nets, so net one and net three, for example, so maintaining that social distancing measure in between. A booking system, all activity must be booked through a booking system so that you're maintaining social distancing measures and the meet-up guidelines around one person from outside of your household, etc. Provide a period of time between bookings so that people can leave and then other people can arrive, so you continue to maintain and adhere to those guidelines. Clubhouses can be open for toilets, but the social areas and everything must remain closed. Sharing of equipment should be avoided. Participants should bring their own equipment, including balls, stumps if they can do. Balls need to be washed down and cleaned after use, and also nets need to be wiped down after use as well, i.e. the poles and everything like that, to make sure that if anyone's touched them or leant on them to access a ball that might have been hit into the side, just to make sure that they are all cleaned and adhered to the guidelines. Obviously, no saliva or sweat should come into contact with the ball at any time either, and wash your hands before and after using the nets. Bring your own hand sanitizer if possible. And I suppose the last one and the really bold one, that is, if anyone feels that they have any of the COVID symptoms, then they should not attend, even if they have booked a session and cancel their session. Obviously, we are dealing with, in the recreational game, a number of volunteer clubs, and the majority of the clubs are run by volunteers, and it's obviously prudent to make sure that the guidance is, although it maintains all of the requirements set out by government, but makes it clear to those volunteers how to implement the things that they need to do.
And all those details in full, the guidelines too, can be found on the ECB website and the Cambridgeshire Cricket website on the COVID section. You can also find them on social media. The Cambs Cricket are also taking any questions clubs may have. Just get in touch with them and they will put them to the ECB and answer any queries you may have around those guidelines. Let's talk about a couple of dates now then, Ben. And the 1st of June, mentioned by the government, is when they believe schools may be able to reopen non-essential retail as well. And they also mentioned sporting events being played behind closed doors but broadcast across to the nation. Does this mean we might get some pro cricket on our screens?
I think obviously the announcement of from the ECB that professional cricket is not going to take place before the 1st of July. So that obviously is the other side of the government announcement at the 1st of June around step two, potentially. Obviously, we're still unclear of that at the moment, but we are following it with interest to see if there is the possibility of that happening. Obviously, there's a number of things that have been mentioned around behind closed doors, bio-safe environments and things like that. So it's very much a watch this space from our point of view. But because the date falls the other side of the government, the next government step, we would be obviously looking that there is a potential for that to happen.
And the 4th of July is the later date, step three, when they've suggested leisure centres, maybe pubs, etc., could open. If there are some overcrowded spaces, though, that places that often get overcrowded, they're still not open. So it is that trying to, I guess, reduce the amount of people in one room or one area together at a certain point and making sure people try and adhere to that socially distancing measures of 2 metres. So realistically, we're still not too much closer to recreational cricket coming into play. But equally, I guess if the pros show they can do it, maybe around July, August time, there might be some room maybe at the back end of the season for recreational cricket.
There's a hope that obviously it's been mentioned that alongside, you know, other sports, the spacing in cricket potentially allows for social distancing or some sort of social distancing. Obviously, that's not on all parts of the game where a keeper may be standing up or when a bowler runs past the umpire. Obviously, those are two, you know, real and massive parts of the game, and that would not be adhering to social distancing. But obviously, there's, you know, looking further and past that. And once there are some further clarity on whether the professional game can restart and what kind of measures they put in place, it would be interesting to see how that can be transferred into some sort of format within the recreational game, if at all possible.
Ben, great to talk to you. Thanks for coming on, mate. And I'm sure we'll chat again soon.
No problem. Thanks again, Ollie. Cheers.
Now, before we move on, let's quickly hear a snippet from this week's From the Pavilion Lockdown podcast. It's a very special episode as myself, Callum Guest and Alex Sears chatted to England fast bowler and World Cup winner, the legend that is Mark Wood. Here he is talking about watching that amazing World Cup final back with his England teammates and the scenes on the pitch with his family after.
We actually watched the full game together. So we had like maybe a Zoom or a different app. We had all the lads throughout the day went on to this app, and at different points during the day, there was different people on. Owen Morgan sat and watched the whole thing with a glass of wine, and Josh Butler was on when I went in as well. And there's certain things like, I was asking Morgie, or when you look back now, he was like, why did I leave him on for so long? Why didn't I change this? So it's amazing the little things you pick up on. But in the moment, I remember I've watched it back maybe a month or two after the final. I watched it back, the highlights, and I haven't watched my opening spell since. I'm that embarrassed by it. I'll not watch it again. I pulled a heap of rubbish where I think I was obviously just too up for it, where I've watched it and I think, why am I not just hitting the top of off stump as many times as I can? Why am I trying to blow a bouncer? Why am I trying to do this? And it's frustrating to watch. But overall, I think watching it back and talking about it with your mates and stuff like that, like, it still brings back great feelings, like watching it now. I've watched it a few times and I never really get sick of it, to be honest. It's, even when you know it's, like, it's such a freak game when you see the stuff that happens in the end. Like the last two or three overs, like one of them big things happens usually once a game. And there was like six or seven things happened in the space of three of us that just never happened. It was just ridiculous.
Everything just aligned, didn't it?
I know. And it was almost just like
meant to be. It almost started from that catch that he stepped on the rope. That almost started then. It was almost like the snowball effect, wasn't it? It was almost like every single ball was an event from then onwards. It was just it was incredible.
Someone was trying to trump everyone, wasn't it? Oh, you should do the rope this time, right? Next time we'll throw in the overthrows. All right, this time you'll be a super rover. It was like,
how weird can we get?
Yeah.
The cricket gods just rubbing their hands together above the game, like, right, what have we got next?
The scene afterwards of all the family members sort of on the pitch, it was almost like sort of heaven, really, with the sun just setting over Lourdes and just all these sort of different people, all the family members coming on and obviously sharing the experience. That must have been amazing.
The only other time I've had stuff like that, I mean, if you think of like when I've been a part of like an Ashes winning team, the families come into the dressing room and you get to spend time with each other, and that's brilliant. But actually be on the field in the World Cup final after what had gone on, and it wasn't just us as well. People forget that. Think, oh, it was just us. The whole of the New Zealand family and friends, they were on the field as well. So it was actually quite a nice mix. I mean, this iconic game, they were obviously gutted, but they're the best set of lads you could ever wish to play against. They play so hard on the field, but then off the field, they're fantastic losers. They're good winners as well, so they're not they don't like rub it in your face or anything like that. And I've played with Tom Latham quite a bit at Durham, and he was someone that I had a bit of chat with at the end of the final as well, with his family. So it was a great atmosphere, and to have my family there, and Sarah, my wife, was heavily pregnant at the time, so I was trying to calm her down because she had a bit of a rollercoaster day. So it was just an amazing feeling, really.
Yes, that was England bowler and World Cup winner Mark Wood talking to us on the From the Pavilion Lockdown podcast. This week's podcast, which has been released already, you can find it on the Cambridge 105 Radio website. The links to it on our social media pages at FTP Cricket 105 or at 105 Sport 2, both on Twitter and Facebook. The podcast in full will also be played on Saturday at 12 p.m. and Sunday at 6 p.m. on Cambridge 105 Radio. Make sure you tune in. It's a great listen.
Cambridge 105 Radio. Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Welcome back to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Let's talk Cambridgeshire Cats now then, and American football, as it was announced that their season has been cancelled last week. Coach Daniel Visick joins us on the show now to talk about it. Daniel, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Nice to speak to you again.
How are you? I think it's been a few weeks since we last spoke, and lockdown measures have been eased. How has that affected you at all?
It's nice to get out and about a little bit more now, a little bit more freely. I think it's helped out a lot of other people. I guess people were kind of stuck into a little routine, not being able to go out as much. But I think this has definitely helped, and a lot more people have gone back to work now with the restrictions still in place, which has obviously helped as well.
Yeah, it certainly has. And with regards to recreational sports and sports in general, last week it was announced that the 2020 contact season for the British American Football Association has been cancelled. Of course, it's devastating news for all those involved. You're so keen to get a season on, and it isn't to be the case this year.
No, unfortunately, no. The government's still sticking to, obviously, their guidelines. And then, obviously, the governing body for BAFA have come out and said, no, we're not going to do adult contact league. That's their decision. It's disappointing for the players and fans and, obviously, everybody involved. But, you know, the safety of everybody involved is the priority. So the reason behind it all is understandable.
And what does this mean exactly for Cambridgeshire Cats in respect to matches, training, you know, even whether it's just members of the team going out and playing American football themselves?
It's still up in the air, to be honest with you. Coaches are obviously still talking almost every other day, coming up with ideas what we can do once we do know that we can be more involved as a team recreation-wise. Again, players are still communicating. A lot of them are still training. We actually do have a live stream with one of our fitness instructors on the team who gets the players involved, and they all get involved on Sunday mornings. So they're all going through stretches, lifting various things. So it's a great way to keep them fit and involved. Again, like we spoke about before, we are communicating with players about things. We are getting involved with doing some online seminar things with them, going over plays, question and answers. That's pretty much is all we can do right now. And if anything, it gives us a chance to get ready for the next season. A bit more practice behind us. People get more ready physically wise, playbook wise, and gives us a chance to recruit some more players too. So there is a benefit to it as well.
And with regard to the decision, what was your view on the call to end the season, or not even start the season last week? Across sport, whether it be football or any other sport, really, there's always been, I guess, not criticism, but opinions on what governing bodies should do with the seasons, whether they've been in the middle of them or at the end of them. What was your take on the Bathurst decision?
As a former player, of course you want to play. There's no doubt you want to play no matter what, even if it's one game, that's it. But to be honest with you, considering what's going on, is an extraordinary circumstance that we're in right now. It's understandable. And most importantly, from a coach's point of view, we do want the safety of our players to be a priority. So understandably, it's the right decision. Most important thing now is to keep everybody together and prepare for the next season now.
And the Baffa mentioned also that clubs were consulted during the process. What was the general consensus amongst the clubs? Do you know?
It was looked upon having a shortened season. There wouldn't, however, be any implications for promotions or relegations. However, you would probably get a handful of games, so you would at least have some sort of season. Now, of course, like I mentioned before in the last interview, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes with arranging facilities, fixtures, medical teams, things like that. So it would have been a scramble to get it done. It was looked at. I think we're almost there, but I think every team had to agree with it and agree with the fixture rearrangements. I think it just got to the point where not everybody could do it. So I guess it was voted that the season will not go ahead based upon that.
And to play the season, they were looking at a mid-July sort of start date. And with that pre-season taking around about 6 weeks leading up to that, so around about the start of June, that really seems the killer. That's the key point here, I guess, that because it's such a long pre-season, you need to try and make a decision as quickly as possible.
That would have been it. I mean, it would have been a case of getting everybody back to fitness levels that are sufficient to play the sport, get everybody back again into the playbook, finding out who's available, because obviously the schedule would have changed. People's personal diaries would have changed as well because of that. So there would have been a lot of preparation with that, just getting people's minds back into it, which does take longer than 4 or 6 weeks, to be fair. So it would have been interesting to see if it would have been done.
And for me, someone who doesn't play American football, 6 weeks seems a little excessive, but you can quite rightly tell me and put me in my place if that isn't the case.
It's not. It sounds like a long time. You'd think it'd be easy to get ready for a season, but it's the mindset, understanding the plays, your roles, what you need to do, getting your body right as well. It's a very physically demanding sport, just like rugby as well. You got to get used to getting hit again. I was not saying you just walk onto the field and do. You got to learn how to tackle correctly, protect yourself correctly. So it's something that really you only get to do a couple hours on a Sunday practice. So what we'll say, 6 weeks, 3 hours of practice is really not a lot of time to get it all done.
And you mentioned there could have been a possibility of a modified season. What were some of the ideas talked about? Was it sort of half the games or a different sort of setup altogether?
It would have been a shortened season. So I think it was about a handful of games rather than 10 that we would have done. I think the length of the game time-wise was also to be shortened a little bit too. That's as much as I know. I think, like I said already, was there'll be no promotion and no relegation implications due to the shortened season. So it really would have been a season with no implications. So really like a glorified friendly season. That's the way I would look at it.
And one of the additions onto the statement by the Baffa was that they do hope friendly games could take place maybe late August, who knows, or later on in the season at least. And of course, let's keep our fingers crossed that still could be the case for you guys. They also mentioned the statement that the flag football season is still up in the air. A decision hasn't been made on that. Just to explain the difference between flag football and contact and why there's more of a chance of this season going ahead.
Well, flag football and tackle football are completely different in the aspect that tackle football, you got all the pads, the helmets, physical contact. Flag football, there's no pads whatsoever. There's really no contact. You get what is like a belt to put on, which has three flags. To perform a tackle, all you had to do is pull one of the flags off the belt. And that player is, the play is done, technically. So really, there isn't any physical contact, which is obviously the problem that we got right now going into the adult contact league. So maybe flag can go ahead because you're not really in that distance as such, but I don't know the whole ins and outs of it yet and if they're going to do a full season, shortened season, or if a season is going to happen at all. But could be optimistic, I guess.
And am I right in saying Cambridge don't have a flag side?
No, we don't. We only have the adult team and we have the juniors team. We haven't got a flag team at this time.
So, of course, there is that hope then of the friendlies for the contact side at the end of the season. What are the financial implications of the 2020 season not taking place? Daniel, both for yourself, Cambridgeshire Cats, and the BAFA, the British American Football Association.
There's a registration which covers your insurance to play the sport, which every coach and player has to pay towards. They are being looked at right now how they're going to reimburse that either fully or partially. The decision hasn't fully been made yet. I think it's still up in the air. There is subs to play as a player, just like you would for Sunday League. You pay with £3 to £5 to play. But with this sport, you pay in excess of about £200, £250 to play. That covers your equipment. It covers your transportation, medical staff, money towards the club, i.e. lining out the field, maintaining the field, and just general upkeep of the club, really. Some teams charge up to $1,000, but that's a whole different story. I won't get into that one.
Blimey. And assume, is that money, the BAFA actually said in their statement, that the majority of their contact members will receive a partial refund of the 2019-20 membership fee over the coming weeks. Now, has there been much uproar about that? Have people accepted it?
It's a 50-50, to be honest with you. I've tried to keep away from it myself, because obviously whenever you post something on the media page, it's obviously reflecting the team as well. So I've kind of just looked in to see what's been said. A lot of people are okay about it. Some people are quite upset about it. And hopefully what they are looking to do, I guess, if my opinion gets counted, is use the money that you put in towards this season, use it towards next season as your registration. Hopefully that's an avenue they pursue. But again, it's still up in the air, and I think it's being questioned as we speak as to what's going to happen.
Well, we'll keep across that. We'll see what does happen. Daniel, thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. And fingers crossed, whether it's friendly, who cares really? As long as there's some American football come the end of the season, that'd be great.
We'll definitely let you know. Take care. Cambridge 105 Radio.